This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
A check-in with things going on in the Oregon State Legislature, and State Representative Cedric Hayden just off the House floor a bit ago. Cedric, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Kyle.
Well, I wanted to ask, first of all, about a couple of things that apparently were this morning. One was legislators voting to consider a bill that would give the legislature oversight in the governor's emergency powers. Republicans moved to pull HB 2243 out of committee directly to the House floor for a vote. How did that go this morning?
So there's a process that we do here in the legislature. If a bill isn't moving through committee, we have, any member has the ability to do a procedure called pulling it down to the floor. So this bill that we're talking about here, House Bill 2243, we pulled that to the floor this morning. We do that in a process called propositions and motions, to where we don't get to debate the substance of the bill, but we get to vote on whether we want that bill to come to the floor to debate that. And so that came to the floor today. And what this would do is it would basically limit the emergency powers, or the governor's emergency powers, for a declaration of emergency. And it would require that the governor would issue a written statement setting forth the reasons of the declaration and the geographic scope of the declaration, and it must contain, you know, specific facts to support its conclusion. So basically, based on science, are we doing these emergency disaster declarations, executive orders, based on something more than kind of just throwing darts at a board? And so we wanted to have that discussion on the House floor. All of the Republican members voted for that, and a couple of Democrats also did come across and vote for that, but not enough to get it passed to have a debate and a vote on the House floor.
And in the Republican House caucus release out in the past little bit, it said county commissioners have repeatedly asked the governor to be more targeted in her decisions. And of course, right now, a lot of controversy over so many more counties going into extreme risk as of this week. And we're expecting an announcement out of Salem sometime in the next little bit about how things look for next week. So obviously it's a hot topic right now.
Yeah, it's a hot topic. And so, you know, kind of the point of that bill was, you know, don't lump us all together. You got to give some explanation for it. You have to have some science base for that. Our restaurateurs are feeling really hit by that. We can get to that in a minute. But basically, the extreme risk counties, Baker, Clackamas, Columbia, Crook, Deschutes, Grant, Jackson, Josephine, Klamath, Lane, Lynn, Multnomah, Polk, and Wasco counties have been moved back up from a different category to the extreme risk, which really affects the residents within those counties, and particularly the small businesses that are trying to struggle through this pandemic and all the executive orders in that. And so, you know, it's hard for them to see that. It's disappointing to see that big lump of the state being put back on extreme risk orders.
And of course, during this pandemic, we've seen things kind of go back and forth. I'm told that's kind of the nature of a pandemic. It's a bit of a roller coaster trying to get to the ultimate end you're hoping to achieve. But the getting there process has been very bumpy, and clearly the business community has been hit hard. I saw this morning from Portland, a number of businesses that, as their leases come up, some that have been in operation for decades are calling it quits.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of that, and the concern is that these decisions, or the risk of these decisions, seem to have some arbitrary triggers to them. And kind of going back to the extreme risk, the governor decided a few weeks ago that if the hospital folks in the hospital got above 300 beds, then it would be one of those triggers for that extreme risk. Now, I serve as vice chair on the COVID committee, and I've been putting some pressure there. Patrick Allen, the Oregon Health Authority director, comes and testifies with Dr. Seidlinger on what they're doing, and they kept referencing this modeling coming out of Oregon Health Science University, and really pressured them on that. So we did get that modeling released, but I think it was a little arbitrary to just pick 300 hospital beds. We have a lot more capacity than that. So we were trying to figure out, okay, why did you pick 300 beds, and at what point do vaccinations, the amount of vaccinations, come into play? And so we're really trying to get some more science base to this rather than kind of just picking a number and saying that's where it's at. As far as the businesses and stuff that are within that extreme risk, now, the governor did take, you know, from some of the funds that she has available. Of course, the governor has a lot of funds in different areas that they can pull from that we generally refer to as slush funds. The governor did say, you know, that they would take, she would take $20 million and make it available for these small businesses. But the way I understand that is it's not going to help any of the businesses in the state of Oregon that have been under extreme risk. It would only be for this period of time. And, of course, that's heavily skewed to the metropolitan area, which we see time and time again, that are rural counties like Douglas County that has been through this and was, you know, moved back up in a higher risk level and got back down. They wouldn't be eligible for those funds. And so I think taking just a snapshot of time to push out that $20 million is unfair, you know, across the state.
Well, let's run into some other topics here. Also passed out of the House today, a bill to ease rebuilding for communities impacted by the 2020 wildfires. And I'm told that passed with unanimous support.
Yeah, so that was one of the bills that came before the House today, and what we're trying to accomplish there, and it did have really good support on the House floor, what we're trying to accomplish there with that bill is to allow folks that have structures that were affected by the wildfires to be able to get back to what they were with as little hassle as possible. That's House Bill 2289 that came through the House floor today. And so if you look at really the impact of what has happened with Oregon, and you look at all the wildfires that have happened, you're looking at, you know, in 2020 with all the wildfires, you're looking at about $350 million of destruction with 4,000 homes being destroyed. And so what we want to do is make sure that those structures would be able to reasonably get put back in place and authorize the property owners to alter or restore these residents. A lot of these residents have been built that city codes and county codes and whatnot have changed since those been built. And so, you know, originally people are very, very concerned. I was very, very concerned that people would be able to get their permits to rebuild that. And a lot of this has to do with, you know, septic tanks and things like that for the approved dwellings. And so this will allow folks that were affected, those 4,000 homes that were affected, to have an alternative pathway to get to those building permits and to get those restorations restored to what they were before these wildfires.
All right, we're going to take a break. Having a little phone issue there. We'll work on that and come back. State Representative Cedric Hayden, the interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1244, News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1247, Lars Larson coming at 1 on News Radio, 1240 KQEN. Tomorrow, Congressman Peter DeFazio will join us. He's back in the district this week. We'll check in with him on a number of topics. State Representative Cedric Hayden joining us now. In between work going on in Salem with the Oregon State Legislature, I wanted to continue on a moment longer regarding the impact of the 2020 wildfires. I recently, probably 3 weeks ago now, went up the North Umpqua again, the first time in months, went clear up to Steamboat Inn and then back up Rock Creek several miles. And it's clear, and it's especially almost a bit, I don't know, makes you a little bit nervous just to see the impact there. And you realize just how much work is going to be ahead for these people who lost their homes in the Archie Creek fire in particular here and the others around the state.
Yeah, I took the time to drive down there through Glide and up to that steamboat area and personally look at that here about a month or so ago when I had a little time where we weren't meeting in the legislature to go look at that. And, of course, the McKinsey Valley and many other states have really been hard hit. Some of the reports that we're getting back from the recovery efforts are that about 50% of the homes sites have been, you know, cleaned up and the restoration effort has been in place. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that they've restored them. And there is a lot of dry wood products out there as we look at this next fire season coming upon us. So, you know, we've just got to take a different path than we've done in the past as far as being reactive to all these wildfires. Of course, we need to do that, but we also have to get proactive on, you know, getting some timber management that actually will help to reduce this risk that we have on an ongoing annual basis.
And of course, one of the issues in that is, as you look up in the case of the Archie Creek fire, the checkerboard pattern of ownership. You have private land, you have land owned by timber companies, logging companies, then you have sometimes county land, you have state land, federal land, and each entity has a different way of dealing with it.
Yeah, you know, I think there would be an opportunity, and I've long said on these wildfire stuff that if we took a more proactive approach to surveillance, example of that is one of the timber companies here, Weyerhaeuser, when they get to wildfire season, they have a plane up in the air every day, regardless of, you know, weather permitting for flying, regardless of whether or not there's a red flag warning, because our wildfires can come from all sorts of different activities, include human-caused activities. So I think that we don't invest enough on, you know, surveillance and monitoring these forests. Now, that said, it would be really good to come up with a master plan to have all these entities working together. And of course, that would, in my opinion, require some increased harvest targeted to appropriate areas. That doesn't mean that you have to go in and cut old growth, but it does mean that you have to get those ladder fuels, as they call them, that undergrowth vegetation in control that we've ignored in this state for a lot of years.
Let's talk about legislation you're working on in particular as we roll through this session. What are some of the things you're particularly interested in?
Well, as you know, I spend a lot of time in healthcare and human services. One of the things that I dropped one of my priority bills, 3395, that I'm hoping advocating for with members, it's opportunity for the Senate. I testified on the Senate here recently the last week. Our family networks, and this deals with families that need additional supports, particularly for IDD involved families. Those are individuals with developmental disabilities. For whatever reason, during this pandemic, the governor completely slashed their budget, took it completely out. And so I'm trying to get that restored. So I'm spending time, you know, just internally lobbying here for family supports. I think it's critical funding. I do have some indication that I will get that. So that's taken up some time now. You know, we're past the House deadline, so we're starting to look at Senate bills. Another thing that I'm continuing to work on is a large visionary approach to reducing healthcare costs through something called a public option, utilizing all the entities that we have in the state to deliver healthcare system, but to get a coordinated effort that we can help reduce those costs through things like bulk purchasing of pharmaceuticals, larger risk pools so that we can work with the insurance companies to bring their rates down and things like that. Right now, there's a lot of one off every county, you know, the way Department of Business and Consumer Affairs basically sets that up is the price for your health insurance gets set by county lines. And I think we need to break some of that down. So big aspirational goal, but important, and we're getting some traction on it.
How do you feel like the budget process is continuing? I mean, we're already to early May now.
So the budget process is different this year than we've had in prior years because of example is the amount of federal infusion of money coming into all states, not just Oregon, but particularly in our budget affecting what we have to spend. When we originally started on this, we thought we would be doing, you know, a percent cut across the board. And now there's a lot more money. We don't have the final forecast on exactly what dollars are going to be available from the state resources. We are getting a good idea of what's coming into the state on the American Recovery Funds, but we have been told that there will be additional what we call sideboards, or how that money will be spent will be coming next week. And so there's billions of dollars to be allocated. A lot of our cities are being allocated. We do have an estimate on what each city will be receiving, but there's a lot of outlying areas, you know, like the like Glide, for example, doesn't qualify for one of those contributions. So I'm worried about our outlying areas that don't have those funds coming. So this is all kind of a unique budgeting for the American Recovery Act on top of our regular budgets.
What can you tell us about what some of the dollar amounts that are heading to cities?
So I went through, and this is available if you go on to the League of Oregon Cities. This is public information. Anybody can pull that down. It's a little tricky to get to their website, but if you just keep clicking on the American Recovery, you eventually will find an area, an Excel spreadsheet that will give you every city that is listed to receive funds in the state. So example for Roseburg, it is $4,785,815. Winston would be $132,696. Myrtle Creek, for example, $709,953. And if you go through that, Cottage Grove in Lane County, throw one of those in, $2,133,121. So each of these individual areas have some funds allocated to them, but if you take other areas like Glide or Winchester, they don't have anything allocated to them. So trying to figure out what, they did this on 2019 census data, what overlap that some of our outlying areas might participate into that. And so it's an interesting project that I've been spending quite a bit of time on to learn how this is actually going to work.
Now, while Myrtle Creek and Winston are, you know, are different sized communities, they're not super far off. Is this based like on a population per capita ratio, or how does it work?
Well, that is what, if you go into that Excel spreadsheet, there's a little disclaimer on top of it, and it says that it's working off 2019 census, and that they are contributing to the money to that based on the population. But then it also goes into the, talks about the outlying areas, and their intent is for some of those funds to go to where intergovernment has interactions with other, you know, like special districts and things like that. And so I'm trying to parse that out, but my understanding is, like, if it's an incorporated city with a lot of outlying areas, they might get a little bit more money with the intent to spread that out in the area.
And of course, around Douglas County, there are so many of those areas. I mean, the green district between Roseburg and Winston is almost as big as Sutherland population wise, but it's unincorporated.
Yeah, and so, you know, in House District 7, the one that I represent, there's 21 different, you know, cities or unincorporated areas that you can find on the map, and only half of those are allocated for some funding, like Tiller, you know, Diamond Lake, those kind of places aren't allocated for any funding in this. But Douglas County is allocated for $21 million. $523,000, and then you take Lane County, larger population, $74 million is allocated for that. And so these funds will be coming through Department of Administrative Services through the state and then come out to the different entities.
All right, State Representative Cedric Hayden out of time for now. Thanks for being on.
Thank you, sir.
1257 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications, your home for Douglas County's news team, News Radio 1240 KQEN.